Welcome to Educator Forever, where we empower teachers to innovate education. Join us each week to hear stories of teachers expanding their impact beyond the classroom and explore ways to reimagine teaching and learning. Dr. Shelby Kretz is the creator of Little Justice Leaders, an organization that provides social justice education resources for families, educators, and schools. Shelby earned her PhD in education from UCLA, and her research explores social justice education at the elementary school level. Over the past decade, Shelby has worked with thousands of parents, teachers, and school leaders to bring social justice education to elementary-aged kids. Welcome, Shelby. So nice to have you here.
Thank you, Lily. I'm so excited to be here and have this conversation.
Me too. Well, if you can start us off by just giving us a snapshot or a longer snapshot of your professional journey, that would be awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've worked in education in and out of the classroom and in many capacities. My career started in after-school programming. So I worked and facilitated and then ran after-school programs for girls in Ohio. And eventually led me to a school counselor position in the college prep program. And then I went back to school to get my PhD in education. So I just recently graduated with that from UCLA and my research there. Thank you. And so I worked with teachers, families, students in many capacities there. And my research was focused on social justice in elementary education. So how elementary school teachers were bringing social justice into their classrooms. And kind of all of this work led me to creating Little Justice Leaders, which is my organization that does social justice education programming for families and educators. So we've been going for about 6 years, providing resources for parents, caregivers, and teachers on how to talk to elementary school students about big, complex topics of social justice that are happening in the world.
So important. And I love how it came out of your studies too. I'm curious just like how or why you decided to go the route of creating your own organization. Was that always something that you had in mind, or did that kind of arise naturally through the process?
Yeah. So I've always been interested in starting something. It's kind of just in my nature, I think, to some extent. But I also, at the time, it was around the 2016 election year when it really started to hit me that this was a huge problem, because I started hearing from so many educators I was working with and so many parents that they just didn't know how to talk to younger kids about what they were hearing in the media, what they were seeing, kind of regardless of where they were on the political spectrum. And a lot of them just weren't talking about it. And I thought, you know, this is a huge missed opportunity and also a real potential for misinformation, confusion, fear, bias to be developing in our youngest kids, because they're getting information from sources that really aren't very trustworthy online. And so I started looking for resources, kind of asking people, like, what are you doing? Who are you turning to? Where do you get information on how to do this? And the answer was always just that they were struggling to find it. And so I just started kind of putting out information and saying, hey, here's how you can start having these conversations with kids. Here's how to bring it, you know, into the classroom. And this was 2 years later. So I didn't even start Little Justice Leaders until 2018. But it was that long of me searching and looking. And it's not that there are no resources. There certainly are, and there are really good ones, and definitely more today than there were back then. But they're just, particularly for elementary, there wasn't as much in the language. A lot of the resources were focused on older students, and or not centered in justice, just a little more focused on information, which is so important, and digital literacy, which is super important, but also like, so many folks want to pass on their love for justice, their passion for creating a better world. And I just wasn't seeing that combination.
I agree. It's interesting thinking back to like to that time around the election. I had my son was born in 2015 and okay. I have a daughter who was born in 2012. And so I remember like her preschool parent friends were asking mm-hmm. me for resources of just like, what do you do?
Exactly.
Kids, to give them like some sense of this at a young level. And, you know, I've done kindergarten before. So actually my first business was called Curiosity Forever. And I created these like activity packs for kids. So I did this like Change Makers Club, which was all amazing on kids being change makers, like random examples. But it was interesting just thinking about like that moment in time. Like, I also agree that at that moment I was like, I just really don't see things out there. And it's really affirming and awesome to see things like your organization, you know, just really grow, you know, from that moment. And of course before, but just seeing that there has been, you know, a bit of a shift in that area.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there is a lot more interest. I mean, a lot more people are asking the question, which is a good thing. But they're asking because we have 4-year-olds who are overhearing these horrific news stories, or, you know, 6-year-olds who have unfiltered access to the internet. And it's just becoming more and more of a problem. So I'm really glad to see more and more resources being created, because we need it.
Absolutely. And when you look as a grown up being like, oh, how did people get to this point? like, why is all of this happening? And like all this injustice and like all these, you know, systems of oppression and all these things, like, you know, it all starts with kids too. I mean, of course, systems, but also kids. And so I think thinking about reaching little kids is so powerful. So can you tell us a little bit about what Little Justice Leaders offers?
Yes, absolutely. So historically, if you've known anything about us, you probably are thinking of us as a subscription box company, because that's how we started. So we did monthly boxes for parents and caregivers and educators. And every month was a topic of social justice. We did that for 6 years, and we just are closing down the monthly boxes now, just because we want to be able to offer our resources more sustainably and in a way that's going to be more accessible to everyone, more affordable. So now we have kind of two main offers. The first is our digital community. So this would be like, if you were interested in the boxes before, this is a space for you. It is for parents, caregivers, educators, anyone who loves kids and is around kids and wants resources, support, and to be in community. Like, the space is meant to be co-created, a sharing of resources, like what we just talked about. It's so hard to find resources on your own. That doesn't mean they're not out there. And so being in community with other folks who know about these things and can connect. And then also just a space for us to be able to share a lot of the resources that we've created over the past 6 years in partnership with so many incredible educator activists. So that that's our main thing. So that's the Little Justice Leaders membership community. And it's really incredible. There's some amazing resources in there. So highly recommend checking that out. The second thing is our schools program. So now we're thinking about how we work with schools in a more holistic way. So I've worked, you know, we've worked a lot with school leaders on school culture, trainings, professional developments, curriculum over the past 6 years. And now we're being a little more systematic and looking for schools that want to think about social justice at a cultural level and really reframing how, you know, they center justice in their schools. And so that's the Little Justice Leader Schools Program. So if you're a school leader or you want to bring that to your school, that would also be something to check out for sure.
Those both sound amazing. And I love hearing about the evolution too. I also totally relate to this. When I was doing Curiosity Forever, I did these curiosity packs for the first couple years, which were monthly boxes. And I always say that I stopped because like mail was consuming my life. Like, I was just like, I cannot deal. Like, we were living in an 800 square foot house with like, then had 2 kids and a dog. And I was like, I can't have all these packages.
Right. It's so, much. Yeah, it's so hard to keep it going. And then it's so expensive to run. If you're not like Amazon, you can't get free shipping and all the things.
I know. Just like the math of it wasn't mathing, you know,
exactly.
Just being like shipping. I mean, shipping in particular, I was like, I can't charge more for shipping than I do for the box.
Exactly. And then, I mean, just for teachers who often are, you know, not getting paid, obviously, what they should, to be asking them to pay out of pocket for these kind of resources was so hard for me.
Yes. But I love the digital community. I mean, I think that's such a smart move for everyone, like for you and for, you know, the people that you work with, because it's like, it's much more direct. Like you were saying, like, of just like sharing these resources. Yes. Like we now have our Educator Forever network community, which is like, you know, similarly like educators we get together with and like a community that people can learn from and with. But I think like it's so much more direct than being like, okay, I'm going to print this and then I'm going to do this. And then maybe if I have a great idea, like far into the process, it doesn't get there. And so I think there's something about being a digital community that really allows for co-creation and more like rich relationships.
Exactly. It does. Like someone can ask for a resource today and, you know, in theory, we could have it up next week. Or, you know, I think the other thing too is like access to the information you need right when you need it. Like if you're having a problem with racism in your classroom, you can't wait for our anti-racism box. You don't know when that's coming or if that's coming. But in the community, you can log in and say, okay, what resources are here now? And get what you need right away.
Absolutely. I love it. And so we've talked about this a little bit, but I'd love to hear from you. Just why is it so important for kids to know about social justice topics?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think a few things. I would have said this before kids even had this unfiltered access to the internet. I think it's important because we know from research that kids are developing bias as early as age 4. And so if we are not counteracting that bias, then what we're doing is compounding it. And when we wait until they're 14 or 18 even to start these conversations, that's 10 years or more that they've had these biases being reinforced by society because we live in a biased and unjust society. And so if we aren't taking active steps, then essentially we're adding on layers and layers and layers that our children will then have to unlearn, that so many of us as adults have had to do. And the more we just normalize and start the conversations when they're younger, the less they get burdened with all of that bias, all of that, those kind of layers that they're going to eventually have to peel back if they want to, you know, step into the real world and focus on, care about justice and care about community and people. That being said, this is so much worse now, because not only are kids developing kind of that natural bias of, like I said, starting at 4 years old, research is showing kids demonstrating racial and gender biases, but now it's being particularly exploited and intentionally exploited with sites like YouTube. So there are folks who are quite intentionally using those types of platforms to radicalize children, to slowly kind of introduce them to various topics in ways that, you know, are probably not what you want them seeing as an adult who cares about them. And so I think that's a huge concern. And if we don't ask the question, if we don't have the conversation, we might not catch this. And this is particularly, you know, scary for like preteen age kids as well. But even with younger kids, the misinformation, the disinformation, most adults nowadays can't even decipher what's real and what's not on the internet. And so how can we expect a 6-year-old, an 8-year-old, even a 15-year-old to do that without our help, without our support? It's just not possible. And so making sure that they have a trusted person they can ask, hey, I heard about this thing, you know, that's going on in the world. Or, hey, I saw this article, or I heard this news story, it really scared me. But if you shut them down when they ask about it, because it makes us uncomfortable, because it does. But so if you shut them down, then they feel like, okay, well, you know, I can't ask my parent, I can't ask my aunt, uncle, grandparent, teacher, whoever it is. So I'm going to make sense of this with the information I have online and my friends, my peers. And that's what we see happening. And so I would encourage people to really think through like the potential, you know, outcome of that. If, like I said, you want to start this conversation when they're 18, it's way too late.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, both inspiring and frightening.
Exactly.
I would say, yes. Parent of a 9 and 12-year-old, I absolutely see that. And I think that having, you know, even when they have what I think is like supervised YouTube time, or something, you know, then I'm like, wait, what? You know, like, what is that?
Yes.
And so I think having those conversations and also like developing this, I don't know, if like awareness and almost like moral compass too.
Yeah.
Where kids, if you've been having these conversations all along, when they see something, that goes against, you know, all these things that they've been talking about, they're able to then point it out, you know, yes. or be like, wait, what is, mm-hmm. what is this? Rather than just yeah. accepting it as normal. And so I think that's just like such a good perspective for mm-hmm. everybody to think about making it normal from the very beginning exactly. to have these conversations and develop this critical eye.
Exactly. And I feel, you know, I focused kind of on the scary part there, but I think that there's so much like positive side to it too, right? Like having kids who care about other people, who have really strong empathy skills, who have a really deep social awareness of how the world works and how to interact with people in very respectful and caring ways. Like that is such a valuable skill for young people, for anyone. And it's beautiful when you see your kids having it. I hear, you know, so many people who their kids will call them out for not being inclusive or for using, you know, language that's not inclusive. And those moments are just so beautiful when you see your kids like really challenging societal norms, even challenging us as adults to be better. And who doesn't want to raise kids like that?
Yes, absolutely. I've had many moments with my kids just yes. like that, you know, where it's like, you know, recently I was like, oh, this woman across the street or something. They're like, you mm-hmm. don't know that that's a woman.
I love that.
And I was like, great. Like, thank you. You yes. know, I don't know that. And so it's really affirming and awesome mm-hmm. to see young kids have this very strong perspective. Or I shared yeah. the other day, like my son who's 9, he just automatically calls everybody they as their pronouns, that. Even if mm-hmm. he knows their pronouns. Like my sister who goes by she, her pronouns. Yeah. Like he's just like, okay, what do they want? And I'm like, great, cool. Like yes. it's awesome how that's just like a part of your life now where yes. I have to, you know, I intentionally sometimes be like, I'm going to use they, them if I'm not sure, you know? And so, yeah, definitely really cool to see kids yeah. be empowered in this way.
Absolutely. I love that so much. And I think that's just an example of how it's sometimes easier for them. Like I said, if they're not peeling back 20 years of, you know, like norms and standards that they've learned, it's so much harder for us to kind of step back and make those intentional choices. And sometimes easier for them because they just start doing it when they're young and they don't have to unlearn all of the, you know, the mess.
And having those harder conversations at the beginning mm-hmm. can that prevent that uncomfortable peeling yes. back. You know, I think that just seeing that perspective can really, you know, make the point to families, to teachers that like, yeah, yeah. it is really worth it, even though sometimes these conversations can be really hard.
Yes.
And so I'm wondering what advice you have for teachers or families who want to broach social justice topics yeah. with young children.
Yeah, definitely. It certainly can be hard. It's intimidating for us. Like I said, we're still often peeling back the layers ourselves, and kids will ask all the questions that maybe we're not prepared for and have no idea how to respond to. That being said, the more we do it, the more comfortable we become. I think the first step is trying to educate yourself, making sure you have some baseline knowledge of what you're going to try to talk about when possible. And sometimes this is impossible because sometimes our kids spring questions on us that we weren't ready for. But when you can try to educate yourself, the more you integrate kind of justice into your life, follow some accounts that educate you about it, read a few books, you know, listen to some podcasts, those types of things will help you feel more secure, more confident in answering those types of questions. The other thing is like you can and should start really small. So if we're talking about young kids, this might just look like diversifying their bookshelf, making sure that the books you're reading are actually inclusive. So that doesn't mean having a few characters of color, but books that center characters of color, books that center characters with disabilities, characters of various genders, characters of, you know, all different types of diversity. So thinking of like immigration status, language, all of those things. When you really start to add that in, then it becomes so normalized for them. It becomes so normalized for them when they just see folks of all different identities just living their lives in the stories they read, in the stories they watch. And so that as they get older, when you introduce topics, for example, of injustice, like racism, what we want is for that to not make sense with their worldview. We want them to have like a strong negative reaction to realizing that that's how the world works. We want them to be enraged. We want them to be confused. And if the first time we introduce race to them, it's in learning about racism, then they never have that moment to have it not make sense, right? Especially if they haven't been surrounded by much diversity in their life. And this goes for any topic. You could say the same for, you know, transgender identities, for example. Start positive. Start positive. And this is the fun stuff too. Like, just really fun stories, positive stories, showing lots of representation. You don't have to jump into all the hard topics right away.
So inspiring. Absolutely. And I think I love this idea of just like, you know, even in a world of so much injustice and we want kids to be outraged and we want them to take action, like starting with the positive and starting with like what we ideally want the world to be like. When I was teaching, I always thought about that as my classroom. Like I was like, all right, like this is like a little microcosm. Like we can create the values and the systems that really support everybody. And so starting from that place and then of course confronting all the things that we need to confront as well, but having that affirming part as well.
Exactly. And I think, you know, that the affirming part is so important. Like, you know, if you have, if you're white and your kids are white, you can still have them, let's say, paint a self-portrait and have them mix their skin color perfectly, or try to find the perfect skin color. And you can notice that they probably have different skin color, even if they're siblings of the same race, right? And then you can celebrate that. Look at how all of us in our family have a different shade of, you know, tan skin. And isn't this beautiful? And now we can all make our self-portraits. And it's just, it's affirming them, who they are, their identity. It's affirming everyone around them and that differences are good. Like just really reinforcing differences are good. Differences are beautiful. Kind of breaking the idea that like we all have to be the same or there's one way that's the right way and one thing that's good. And this is really fun because you can do it with so many arts and crafts. You can do it with coloring. Like we bring art into so much of this work. Like draw your family portrait, draw, and family broadly defined, whoever you care about in your life that you consider family. They may or may not live with you. They may or may not be a big part of your life, but this is your family. Draw it and let's celebrate how all of our families look different. And kids love it because it's art, it's fun, it's crafts, and we have these lessons involved in that. Like it can just really be part of kind of the day to day, we can bring it in, or we're doing a craft about trees and we can talk about how important nature is to our earth and why we should take care of our earth. And then maybe we go outside and, you know, walk around and look up the types of trees that are around and celebrate earth. Like there's just so many easy ways to bring this in. That's actually fun. It doesn't always have to be like, let's sit down and have a talk about racism or let's sit down and talk about transphobia. Like it can be so much lighter than that a lot of the time. And then sometimes of course it's heavy too.
Yes. And having that intention, you know, and it doesn't have to be like these giant activities, you know, but just a different lens to put on your everyday conversations, you know, and have, bring a little bit more intention or awareness to the messages that are coming through to the kids. Great ideas. And so I'd love to shift back to just your experience starting your own organization. What have you learned about yourself through the process?
Oh gosh, so much. Ben. A wild ride over 6 years. But it's been so fun. I think for me, some of the biggest learning have just been, and I'm still working on this one, but like self-trust, like realizing, okay, people are actually coming to me for curriculum, for school programs, for, you know, resources, coming to me and acting like I'm the expert. That can feel very like disorienting, I think, when I'm like, I don't know if I know everything, you know, I know I don't know everything. But being able to trust yourself, like trust yourself, trust your experience. I was actually talking with an educator today who kept, you know, kind of discounting her experience, saying like, I don't have any formal education in this. I'm like, but you're an educator, and you have experience. And that's so valuable. So learning to recognize that in yourself. I think it's so much easier to recognize it in other people. But you kind of have to if you're doing your own thing, because at some point you have to trust yourself to deliver. I think the other thing has been just learning my strengths and weaknesses. Like I think so many educators have different strengths, obviously. Some being with kids, without kids, writing, you know, engaging with certain activities. And sometimes I think in the traditional classroom, we kind of all have to fit to a specific mold, which works and is fun. But also, like, for me, I've learned, like, the long hours of uninterrupted writing curriculum, or, you know, being able to brainstorm, like, a theme and create amazing collaborations with other folks. Like, those things I love so much. And so being able to really step back and say, oh, I love these parts of the work, or I don't love these parts of the work, really helps you get to know yourself. And I think when you start your own organization, you're forced to do everything. So you really get to know what works and what doesn't.
I definitely relate to mm-hmm. both of those points.
Yeah.
I mean, I think as being a teacher, it's so, like, you just kind of have to do everything. And yeah. So, you know, you just kind of do a million things at once.
Right.
And so I also still, like, 12 years later, after leaving the classroom, I'm like, it's so dreamy on days when I can just, like, write curriculum.
Yes. You know? I love those,
like,
days.
Uninterrupted. I'm like, mm-hmm. this is fantastic. I'm like, yeah. in my pajamas, like, creating a cool unit.
Yes.
Like, so fun. And then,
exactly.
And then, yeah. I think that's just, like, the believing in yourself, you know, part is also so huge. Mm-hmm. I used to have a post-it that said, bet on you, when I first started my business, because I think
it's like,
yeah, it's just so hard though. I mean, it sounds like almost like it sounds easier than it is.
It does. It does.
And it's like layers of just being able to trust yourself. And I think part mm-hmm. of that trusting yourself is, like, knowing that even if things don't go the way you wanted them to, or you make a mistake, or yeah. like you do the wrong thing, like, whatever, that you'll be able to figure it out.
Exactly.
And so I think it's so related to, like, resilience mm-hmm. for me too. And it's an ongoing process. And I think, like, just starting a business is such a personal development journey.
Mm-hmm. It definitely is.
I appreciate your reflections on that.
Yeah.
And so, thinking about people out there who might be listening, educators who want to start their own businesses,
yeah.
what advice would you give them?
Go for it. It's never going to feel like this is the time, this is the moment. I think just jump in. You can always, you know, do it on the side for a while. I did for a long while. And so you have, you know, some sense of security if you're not the type who wants to jump right into it. But just go for it. See what happens. I mean, when I started my business, I literally just started by posting on Instagram, like, hey, do people want resources for talking to kids about social justice? And, you know, here's a few things. And the response I got was incredible. And I wouldn't have known that if I would have sat around thinking about it for a really long time, which, to be fair, I did that too. But, you know, once I started posting, it was like, oh, people really want this. And I put up a pre-order link. I didn't have any product. I had nothing. I just wanted to see if people would pre-order and actually give me money. And they did. And I was like, oh, wow, I need a product now. but it's just, you know, sometimes that affirmation, like, from other folks to say, yeah, like, we want this. And it doesn't always come that quick too. So don't give up if it doesn't come quick. But just get started and see what happens.
Taking action is truly magical. I mean, I think it's like, I also, you know, have thought about things many times for way too long. And I think that's, you know, sometimes part of the process too. Mm-hmm. But once you start taking action, and imperfect action is really where you get clarity of being like, oh, there's actual people out there mm-hmm. who are interested in this thing.
Yes.
And I always give that advice, and I still do the same. Like, I don't, you know, sell anything really, you know, when it's been fully created. Mm-hmm. I'm like, hey, do you want this thing? And then it's the motivation.
Yes.
And, you know, you have the money coming in to, like, fund you to create the thing.
Yes.
And so I think that's the best way to do it, even though it can feel terrifying. Mm-hmm. It'll actually, like, make the thing happen for actual people who want it.
Exactly. Exactly. It kind of forces you to do it. And I think now, especially nowadays, like, you don't have to spend a lot of money. There's a lot of really simple to use tech tools that, like, you know, it can take you a couple of hours to get set up or less. And yeah, in the past, I think there was just such a barrier of entry to starting a business. And so much of that is gone now. So we might as well take advantage of it.
Absolutely. Well, Shelby, it was so awesome talking with you. Can you tell folks where they can connect with you?
Yeah, absolutely. So probably the best place to connect with us is on Instagram. We share tons of free resources and support for educators and families. So check us out at Little Justice Leaders. Yeah, just lots of free resources, really good stuff there. Same with our email list, even more free resources and you know, all of the things that you might need to start these conversations and get going. You can find that at ljl.education/educatorforever. So you can access our email list that way. And then we do have our website, littlejusticeleaders.com. Check that out as well, especially if you're interested in the membership community. But yeah, anywhere online at Little Justice Leaders, you can probably find us.
Wonderful. We'll put all the links in the show notes as well.
Great.
All right. Thanks so much,
Lily.
Yeah, thank you. Take care.
You too.
Ready to find rewarding, impactful work in the education world? Take our free quiz to discover your next right career step. Will you be a curriculum developer, an education consultant, instructional coach? The list of possibilities goes on and on. Take the quiz to find out the best fit for you at educatorforever.com/quiz. You'll also receive customized resources to kickstart your dream career and life.